So welcome back, Sarah. It's Friday, right? It's crazy.
It's Friday.
It just flies by, but we're so thrilled to have you here. And today you're going to focus on the Iraq War, correct?
Yes, and music therapy.
Okay, very good.
So we end on a positive note.
Yes.
Because it can get pretty depressing talking about war all the time.
Yeah.
Especially when it's so beautiful outside and, you know, it just seems like such a contrast. Just to kind of recap a little bit, Monday we talked about the Civil War and music and that conflict, and then Wednesday was World War II, and trying to decide which wars to focus on, I asked my students last semester what they thought, and of course, you know, they said, oh, Vietnam. I said, well, yeah, Vietnam's important, but everybody knows a lot about Vietnam War music, protest songs. I mean, they're great songs connected with that. But then I thought, well, let's get a little closer to our own time. And so, and there's a lot that I didn't know about Iraq. There's a lot of misunderstandings about it and a lot of confusion, a lot of very mixed emotions about this, especially on the part of the service people who are over there, who were over there. So now let's look at this. This is contemporary, and maybe you all will have some things that you want to say about it when we get towards the end. I was focused on music that the soldiers themselves wrote and what they were doing in the military. And of course, this is part of the book that I wrote, that I edited, and it's the next to last chapter. The difference, there's some differences, of course. One is that people who wanted to write about, who wanted to know what the soldiers were doing and wanted to write about what music was going on in Iraq had to basically interview soldiers, and sometimes after the fact, they weren't allowed to actually go in. It was too dangerous. They couldn't go into a combat zone. So a lot of us came, what we know is kind of after the fact. And some of the same questions occur, like how do soldiers use music in a war situation? We've already seen that they've used it to entertain themselves, to comfort themselves, to stay connected with home, and as well as to prepare themselves for battle, giving themselves pumped up, and then dealing with other different emotions, and also grieving and mourning. So I'll touch on some of those things today, because I do have some examples about that. And I want to play some excerpts from a video that was made, a DVD that was made by an Australian filmmaker, where he went to Iraq, and this was after things had started to settle down a bit, and he went and interviewed soldiers, different places, and recorded things. And I think that's the best source of information that I have been able to find about what happened there. So just a time frame, after 9/11, all the military services, the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, really ramped up their recruiting videos. And they used music as part of that process. And I can't show you any because I'd have to stream them. But you can go online if you're interested and find out. It's a very sophisticated way they use music. They used, you know, the slow-moving, patriotic kind of march, building it up to a climax for the idea of promoting glory and honor. And then for actually action, there's a lot more fast-paced. They use rap, they use rock music. And the idea, of course, because we're relying on volunteers, there's no draft anymore, they needed to get entice people into the service. And so music, there have been interesting things written about the kind of music that was used in those recruiting videos. As in the past, like I said, music was used in the same ways for morale, comfort, entertainment, and so on. One huge difference, of course, is technology. Because now we've got, in World War II, they were relying on radio and records, phonograph records. Vietnam, people had cassette tapes, still radio, those Armed Forces Vietnam radio, and 8-track tapes, well, if any of you remember those, they didn't stay around very long. But soldiers could tape those to their helmets and they went out in the field and rigged them up. And reel-to-reel tapes, if it was a radio station or that they were in a base behind the, and not on active duty. But then the next invention, of course, were CDs. And in the early 2000s, you find soldiers using CDs. I think there'll be one I can show you where they rig up portable CD players. That was the big thing. Mobile music machines changed everything in the way the soldiers listened to music. So you could take your mobile CD player and somehow hook it up to the mechanism inside your tank and listen to it there with your headphones, and it wouldn't be blasted outside, but you could hear it inside. And then, of course, the next great thing was the iPod. And that's what most of the soldiers in Iraq used. I was trying to find, before I came, I was trying to find the first iteration of an iPod, which had a little click wheel that you could turn. My kids had them, but I think they got thrown out, because those were discontinued at some point. Became much more, and of course, as the memory increased, soldiers could put much more music on them. And what we find is that music listening is much more individualized in Iraq. So soldiers made these long playlists. I'll show you an example of one in a little bit. And so everything's very much individualized, as opposed to earlier wars where people had to listen to the same music all the time in groups. That's a big change. And so people have referred to this conflict as their people having their own personal soundtracks to war. So it's kind of hard to generalize more about what people were listening to. So with that, let's listen to some examples. I want to kind of give you some excerpts, as I said, from Soundtrack to War. Is this actually working? Yeah. This was made in, I forgot the date, the early 2000s.
Yeah, we did something there.
Did I?
You got it selected.
Select.
It looks like. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Light, that's what we want.
You're gonna have to
play that. Sorry, please indulge me. I'm just too old for some of this.
Well,
I have a feeling.
So this is some of the example of music. Rap, metal. Do that. Okay, never mind. Now what am I doing? I'm just trying to pause it, turn it down here, I'll tell you what. What I was going to do is say, talk about the different kinds of music. Of course, you know, every war's got whatever's popular at home, whatever the genres are, is going to be, you're going to hear it with the soldiers. And so, we're talking about rap, as you're hearing there. Heavy metal, and if some of you aren't sure what that means, what metal is, it's the kind of really raw, aggressive music that really originated in England in the 1960s, coming out of bands who used heavy amplification and distortion with electric guitars and sound systems, and heavy chords that are struck, and just ear-shatteringly loud most of the time.
Well, angry.
And very angry, yeah. That's the music that soldiers generally used to get themselves pumped up for war, for combat, going out for a mission. And so I'll show you a playlist where they have bands like Outkast and Slayer. And there are so many types of metal and some categories of metal now. And I am the last person to know a lot about any of them. There's thrash metal, death metal. But there's even a category, I guess, called Christian metal. Mm-hmm. Yeah? I have never heard it. Do you?
I'm not a big metal fan myself. I know these subcategories exist, and I've heard what some of them are, but I couldn't tell you much about them.
Oh, okay. All right, so let's go to chapters. If I can do that.
Go.
Yeah. And like, why? It just seems so obvious to point it at that.
Because you pointed at the TV.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's what it is. Thank you. Okay. Chapters and play. No. There we go. Okay, so we'll just start with the first one, and then we're going to skip around, because there's a lot of talking and things, too.
Don't forget to turn the volume back up.
Right.
You have to know so much.
This is Soundtrack to War, Detroit! This is Soundtrack to War, North Dakota! This is Soundtrack to War!
It obviously takes a village to run a computer projector.
This is Soundtrack to War, get a cat! This is Soundtrack to War, 2-3!
Maybe I'll get it eventually.
As a song, that was the motto for our tank, let the bodies hit the floor, because it was fitting for the job we're doing. War itself is heavy metal, I guess.
War itself is heavy metal.
It's the ultimate rush, because you know you're going into the fight to begin with, and then you've got a good song playing in the background, and that gets you real fired up.
There is a lot of innocent civilians that were killed, and I think that is because the U.S. Army, you know, we came in and we knew it wasn't going to be easy, and they pretty much at first shot anything that moved. And like any other war, unfortunately, there's going to be civilian casualties, and we all saw that. You know, a lot of young soldiers saw that.
I'm going to skip to chapter 5 now. This is a young woman who has written her own songs. She's going to sing one of them, unaccompanied.
Yeah, you ask her for a water pump.
Yeah? And Eli just picks water pumps. She writes music.
Yeah, I do that too.
So have you written any songs for you?
A couple of them, but just one patriotic song.
Give me that one.
Sure.
You have written one, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah? Oh, well. So what's this main song that you're in? What's it called?
It's called Home of the Brave. It's basically about what every soldier has to go through out here, their experiences, what they have to give up, their sacrifices, what they want, everything that they wish and hope for.
Okay.
Basically covers it all.
Can you just sing it out of the while you're making a gasket?
Yeah, I'll put the gasket down. It goes on. Deep in the battlefield, all covered in mud, blood, sweat, and tears, we died for our country through the years. No hesitation, driving on with no fears, oh no. Know that we won't stop. Sacrifice and dedication, they give their lives no hesitation. They give up what people take for granted every day. Go places that makes the ghetto look like the states. When a war pops off, that will soon be their fate. And you know that we do it for one simple reason. Cause we're the home of the brave. You can't take that away from me. We fought and died for liberty. And you can't shake us. No one can defeat us. Only God guide us every day. Our sweet home of the brave. Up before the rising sun, 24/7, always work to be done. Destination top secret, every mission unknown. Just hoping one day that we'll soon make it home. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You know that we won't stop. Passion, drive, and determination. We fight for the rights of every nation. Just trying to survive and make the best of every day. We're strapped with the best, cause that's how we roll. No one stands in our way, no one can stop our flow. We're the red, white, and blue, and we represent just for that reason. Cause we're the home of the brave. You can't take that away from me. We fought and died for liberty. And you can't shake us, no one can defeat us. Only God guide us every day. Our sweet home of the brave.
Any comments anybody wants to make?
She was feeling them.
It kind of reinforces how powerful just a single human voice can be, I think. And of course, traditionally, you know, music was sung and accompanied, thinking about Gregorian chant, even though it was a group, but just a single voice even, or voices unaccompanied can be very, very powerful. And she obviously had thought this through, and so interesting personal perspective there. Okay, let's keep going to chapter 6. These are two young men you're going to see here, one of whom is playing his guitar. Very different style.
I'm gonna put some gore metal lyrics to it. I think that'll sound the best. And to me, war is heavy metal.
Heavy metal is fast paced, heavy and emotional. Gets your adrenaline going. It helps you feel what you gotta feel, get it out of the way. It can help you relax, and in the day, it can give you anything you need to feel. Just take it, it's an emotional feeling.
You had a bad experience with having to pick up bits and pieces of gore yourself.
Yeah. That's where I think the liking of gore metal ties in. I liked it before we got out here, but now I feel that I can relate to it a little bit more. I can kind of understand what they're saying, even though they might not have seen it in their life, but they're talking about it. So when you listen to it, you're kind of like, yeah, I know what they're talking about. So that's while I gore metal with me.
So gore metal, I don't know what distinguishes that from any other kind of metal, to be honest. Gore, I would imagine, is talking more about killing and blood and bodies and things as such. But it's sort of telling, this is a way of, he's trying to stay connected with who he was before he came over to Iraq, I think. It's his taste. He liked that music before, now it actually means more to him. That's a kind of interesting thing that you might hear the same music in different contexts or experiencing it in different situations, and it's going to have a different meaning for you. So, okay, the next one is an officer. We're going to go to chapter 8. And this is another kind of music. An older man who's playing, playing very patriotic music. Once we get through this initial one.
I've been listening to a lot of country music lately. My favorite artist is Toby Keith, and my favorite song is Courtesy Red, White, and Blue. ever since 9/11, country music has become very patriotic, and that's what I'm about, the United States of America. So for I named my tank after this song, courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue.
This song I just started working on is called Pledge Allegiance. It goes something like this. Well, she's been through a lot lately. She's been torn and burned. She's been put on trial. Been cursed and spit on. But she'll wait forever in America's land. So let's pledge allegiance for which it stands. As she's with our soldiers in foreign lands. Yes, she's in Iraq and Afghanistan.
You're saying that.
So, a different voice, right? We're hearing very individual moments and voices so far. And I think that was one of the goals, probably, of the filmmaker. Now, the next one is.
Well, and I'm struck by what he believes he's doing.
Yeah.
Compared to what I believe the politicians are up to, and, you know. And they ain't the same.
Yeah. Anybody else want to weigh in on that? You can.
You know, in the good old days, the kings led the armies into battle. They were out in front.
Uh-huh.
Not anymore.
No, that's true. Do you think he? I mean, my question in my mind is he 100% convinced, or is he trying to just make it rationalize things to himself so that he can continue doing what he's been told to do? I think that there are also a tradition of soldiers being patriotic but hating the war.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it strikes me, I mean, I'm a country music fan, so I love hearing those kinds of tunes. Mm-hmm. However, I really have a difficult time with country music in some ways because it's kind of like Lee Greenwood, God Bless the USA. Mm-hmm. It's like, right or wrong,
yeah.
This is the way we're going to go, without question, without, you know, there's no uncertainty, and I just really have a problem with that, my country right or wrong mentality,
mm-hmm.
because my country isn't always right.
Yeah.
But that's my husband was a 22-year Air Force veteran in three different war zones, and we don't clash. We have a very different picture because I was a hippie protesting the war at the time in Vietnam. But these songs make me mad, angry actually, and he thinks they're wonderful. There's so many things he thinks are wonderful, but that was how he was. It was drilled into him from the time he was an 18-year-old kid,
mm-hmm.
that those things were true.
Okay.
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah. That's good. Either one of you, both had hands up, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, just like, this is really a big picture, but how, like, the U.S. government, like, this isn't everyone who's in the army, but a lot of people who are. Like channeled into the army now, the military now, are like core people in the U.S.
Mm.
And it's like in various communities where people talk about like how like a poverty draft as opposed to actual draft that we had during earlier wars, and it's really disgustingly brilliant way to. Hit people who are experiencing oppression at, like, in different forms through like economic oppression in the U.S., pitting them against like Arabs and Muslims, you know, and it like creates, even though like these people are not like who are fighting actually on the ground fighting war, aren't the people who are creating these ideologies and creating these policies, and they're also being deeply harmed by like these experiences of violence. And like I've been living in the Middle East, and yeah, this is like it's the Iraq War is like one of many wars that's just completely torn apart. Not just Iraq, but like the entire region, and so many people are like suffering so much because of this. Like to this day, and it's not going to recover for a long, long time. So much like cultural and so much culture and history, and so many people hurt by this. You know, it's not like the people in these videos' fault. You know.
No, and that's I think what's important to remember, that you know, because it's easy to condemn everything to do with military, and you need to keep the perspective on who's making the decisions and all that. Yes.
I just wanted to add to what Abby said and reflecting back on the question that you asked us, which is I think they're both. I think it's you said, are they trying to not justify, but somehow come to terms with what they've done? Have they created an ideology? And I think you have to survive. Mm-hmm. If you not survive, you would be a broken human being. You had to be in the war metal.
But you also don't have to.
Right. Well, the one thing that somebody made an interesting comment that I read was just that by these individual playlists and soldiers, we're hearing what they're saying, but when they listen to their own music, it's a way of shielding themselves, removing themselves from the immediate situation and kind of a protective bubble that some of them can be in, you know, a space where they don't have to, they can. I think some of them can pretend they're not there, or it's not as bad as they think that it really is. And also, another interesting observation was that when they play music really loudly, they're in a very noisy, chaotic environment. If they're where in the battle zones, if they're in the going out on missions, there are people behind the lines, too, who are sitting at desks, or just kind of a less dangerous type of service. But
they're sitting in Florida.
What?
CENTCOM is in Florida.
Oh, well, I'm thinking there was Phil Clay, who was deployed in Afghanistan, said he really wasn't in a dangerous situation. He was sitting at a plywood desk in the middle of a plywood shack in the middle of a desert. And there are people who had to do jobs like that. But the people, the guys who were featured in this, and the women who were featured in this soundtrack, also used music to exert some kind of control over their environment. They had no control over IEDs and insurgents, and all of a sudden, you know, an order comes up to go here and do this mission and search this house and blow this up. They didn't have any control over that. But by playing their music and sometimes playing it really loudly, they were exerting some kind of control in their environment. So I thought that was an interesting thought. I want to go on to the next one. Is really very poignant. It's two Iraqi men who basically, the one says he learned English by playing American songs, English songs on his guitar. It's a real disconnect against the backdrop of bombed out buildings. And so I think it's important also to try to get some perspective from the people who live there. It's very hard. So let's go on to the, it'll show up in a moment here.
Well, you're the brothers, you're the BGs of Baghdad.
Exactly.
The Bee Gees of Baghdad, they call themselves.
All Bee Gees of Baghdad. BBB.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, can we hear some of the all Bee Gees of Baghdad play?
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
What are you going to play for it?
It's a Bee Gees song. It's entitled New York Mining Disaster. Website, I think it's a Baghdad disaster.
I mean, look behind you.
The event of something happening to me. There is something I would like you all to see. It just about to grab at someone that I knew. Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones? Do you know
Angels. I keep straining in my ears to hear a sound. Maybe someone is digging underground. Or have they given it up and all gone home to bed, thinking that the ones existing must be dead? Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones? Do you know what it's like on the outside? Don't go talking too loud, you'll cause a landslide, Mr. Jones. Yeah? I learned a lot. I learned music from the Beatles, I learned the English language from the Beatles. They simply, they told me everything I know so far.
They do sing an Iraqi song, I think.
Exactly.
He's got a great voice, right?
Special. You spent a long time. Can you tell me the story you told me last night about your time in Abbey Grove?
First of all, I spent one concrete here. I don't know where in Baghdad, but it wasn't the intelligence services, the ex-intelligence services, for the times with you. And I've been talked a lot, I've been hurt a lot, and I still have some marks on my body and my face. And after that, I've been transferred to Abbey Grove political prison. I've been released under the pressure of President Bush, exactly, to Saddam to release the political prisoners in Iraq.
Tell me about the cigarette.
Oh, the cigarette is still, I have a mark here. It's, I've been tied up from a bag and I was laid on the ground. And one of the officers at the intelligence service, he took off his cigars and put it here and scuffed with his shoes. And I still remember the smell of the flesh burning meat. It was a very, very hard and bad time.
You said the most moving thing anyone said to me here in Iraq last night. I said how much I loved going home when I get out of the war zone.
Yeah.
What did you say?
I said I'd like to go home too. You know, well, sometimes when you feel that danger all around and there's no escape, you just want to go someplace, you know, just like an island where there's nobody around, only water, and no sound of gunshots or bombing around, and just have a time of peace. That's what we're missing in our lives. We are missing so badly. We need peace.
What do you mean the song is about the war?
No.
Sounded to me like he was talking about wanting peace so badly, and that was basically what the theme was. Okay, one more here. This is another Iraqi. It's not music actually. It's just this.
Chrissy Bay. Is there any story to this music?
I have been lost with my 7 friends in the world, and the story that they are practicing in our friend house and came back to their home. When they are back, a bomb exploded in the street and killed all of them. So we can't hear their music again. And we are playing this music and send it to their souls in heaven, because we know and we are very sure that they God loves them very much, and they are with him now in paradise.
Amen. And yes, so the whole band is, how many friends did he say? 11?
Seven.
All killed. And there was, so there was, there's obviously was music making going on among the Iraqi population before, during, and after Iraq, the war in our, but he's so calm when he says that. It's just quite breathtaking. Okay, I think at this point I'm going to switch over to the computer. I'll turn this off, see if I can do this. Do you have anything else you want to say? I mean, there's more. There's another clip later on, a chapter, a woman, another female service member talking about how much she loves the Dixie Chicks. Of course, they had gotten so much crap, really, from, you know, after their comment about George Bush and being from Texas and everything. But she sings one of their songs. But I don't think we need to hear that. I want to make sure we have enough time for everything else. But do you have any comments? Anything you want to?
Just a quick thing that I'm thinking about is that how, just kind of like peeling back another layer of, like, the Rocky Man who was playing the very, like, Western music and Western guitar.
Yeah.
And there's, like, so much, like, breadth of, like, Middle Eastern instruments and like style of music, and it was just really interesting that that was, it was just like such a stark like image and like in all of like all of the senses of like the impact of like historically colonialism of the Middle East and of like U.S. Imperialism around the world, you know, that is like that's what people are playing. He was super talented. He spoke English incredibly well, but it's just why are we in Iraq to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like expanding U.S. empire, you know, or like expanding the U.S. military control, and it just it was like kind of that story coming back through a very different, you know, like that cultural globalization and cultural imperialism.
Sorry, I'm trying to find. Here's a document I want. Even though I think that basically another thing too is that American culture, popular culture, is really global in nature. I mean, thanks to media, and we saw this, we've seen this in a lot of past decades, even in Vietnam. And I think this man obviously. He loved American music. He loved the Bee Gees and the sound that they had, and so he learned that. The other man was so calm talking about his torture. That's what it just takes me aback, right? You know, he was in Abu Ghraib, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
So let me to get back to what the soldiers were listening to and their playlists. This is one soldier's playlist that he shared with.
Dean Martin, Louis Armstrong.
it's quite a variety, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wagner.
John Lennon. He's got a piece of chance on there.
Armstrong.
Is this the? Where is the little laser thing that you were using? Oh, she's gone. I don't know where the laser pointer is. Maybe it's not here. At any rate, oops, sorry. Even if you don't know some of these things, and I don't, I mean, I've never listened to Metallica. But I mean, Rolling Stones, it covers all these decades, you know. John Philip Sousa's on there, Stars and Stripes Forever. Right.
So that reflects to what Abby just said. So you have a long history of music here, we have a long history of America implanting itself around the world and Europe before that. So that's what that speaks to of me. It's not all. This is the soldiers list, right?
Yeah, and they picked things to cover all different situations.
Yeah.
So the medal and like the Imperial March from Star Wars, that's pretty aggressive music. So that was what he listened to before going out on a mission. Anything and everything by Slayer, that's tough, hard stuff. But then, and there are stories of soldiers would, sometimes the guys would be able to, would hook up their equipment and broadcast a single song, and they'd all join in as a group and chant over and over and just, keep getting wilder and wilder. Just like an athlete's before a game, they have the huddle and or even before that in the locker room, I guess. I've never been part of that, but everybody has to say the same thing. You gotta breathe together, you gotta chant together, unify, everybody get on the same page. And so they use some of that. But then the other things, the shiny happy people, the gentleman, give peace a chance. Coming out of a situation like that, you've been out for 2 hours on full alert and seeing things and things happening that maybe weren't expected, but if you come back, you're still alive, you need to decompress somehow. This is what the soldiers have reported. So the sweeter things or the slower things all were kind of used for that. Louis Armstrong to help you relax, help you kind of regain your sanity, as it were. So, you're talking about emotional manipulation and moods, terrible, terrible mood swings that you have to go through to do this. But I thought this was, and then the Wagner, of course, some of these things were iconic, like the Rite of Valkyries, somebody pointed out, of course, that was used in Apocalypse Now. And they strapped speakers to helicopters and the army they were flying in to destroy the Viet Cong village. I don't know if you ever saw that movie. Yes. So it's such warlike music. But that's the point of that is so that people see that. That's like the most well-known scene, I think, from that movie. And so a soldier who maybe had seen it once, stuck with that, so put that on there. Yeah, that's we know what that. Star Wars is also iconic, right? Because everybody's seen Star Wars. So some of these things come from different sources. Some are from film, and of course, film has a big influence on all of that. One of the trajectories we talked about, one of the things, of course, besides the actual music for combat, somebody else pointed out that a lot of people, everybody who was in Iraq, whether they were active service or like military contractors, people who were suppliers and things like that, they all had their iPods too. And they used music in a different way. They didn't have to worry about going and killing people or being in battle. So they were still a comfort. They were still a connection with home. And so the iPods weren't always used in battle or to get people ready to fight. The other side of the coin, of course, is that music was used, as it has been in every war, to console the people whose comrades have died, to grieve and to mourn. And I want to share an example with you of there's a soldier named Joshua Rebeck, or Rebeck, I'm not sure how to say his name. And I'm going to read you a quote and then play some songs, because he has actually made albums. And you can download them. Let's see if you can find the right page. Okay. This is Jonathan Pieslak, who wrote a book on soundtracks in Iraq, and he used his earlier research heavily in this volume that I edited. In the Iraq War, although communal singing was less common than in earlier wars, there appeared an unprecedented variety of music composed by soldiers. Joshua Rebeck is one that's mentioned here. The lyrical themes of his album primarily reflect his experiences of war and include songs he wrote for soldier memorial services in Iraq. He describes how he came to perform this music and how the album originated. So he says, I brought my guitar right off from the beginning. I stuck it into the vehicle that we were deploying with. I got the off records okay, the off the record okay by my supervisor, so I stuck a guitar in there and I had it the whole time. When we had time, I would sit around and play, and a lot of times there would be people who would come and sit and listen. Then I had a friend, Sergeant Aaron Jagger, who sang with me, and we wanted to do some stuff for the battalion, you know, play music and things. We lost our first friend, a real close friend, the guy that sang with me, one of Jagger's best buddies, and we were just devastated. His name was Michael Woodland. So we wrote a song, and the sergeant major heard it and wanted us to play it at the memorial. We ended up doing that, and I've ended up playing it every memorial since. A lot of the fallen soldiers have been close friends of mine. One of them was my best friend, Jagger, who used to play with me, and then he was killed, so I had to play at his memorial service. And that's what motivated me to make this album. It was time to do something. So I decided to do whatever it takes to do an album and give it a shot. I'm sure that's what he would have wanted. And then he goes on to say, when we played at memorials, no one cried, no one mourned. They need to do that. Mourn your losses. Don't be ashamed to cry and mourn. My purpose is to help people cry, mourn, and to heal. And so most of his pieces are written with acoustic guitar. He wrote them in Iraq, but he actually recorded them in Germany. He was wounded and was sent there to recover. So, iTunes is being really obnoxious here. I want to play a couple of his songs for you, just to give you an idea of the variety. So the first one is called Bad American, and it addresses some of those issues that you've mentioned already about how there's so much anger on the part of the people who are, the men who are, and women who are over there, and they're not sure what they're supposed to be doing, and they don't agree with it.
Oh no, here comes this guy, not again. Ha, I got something to say this time. Ha, goes like this. Ha, let's go. Blast him, the man's got me working again. He said I'm a bad American. Straight through the holidays and the weekends. He said I'm a bad American. But ain't nothing slowing me down, nothing standing my way. He said I'm a bad American. That I'm a bad American. Well, if one bad apple spoils a bunch, I guess we're rotten now. I spike the punch and the MPs call me Josh when they take me in. I'm one bad American. One bad American. One bad American. One bad American.
One bad American.
anger, right? Mm-hmm. I think it was pretty direct. Now, this other one is going to be a song, it's called Empty Boots, and it was written for one of those memorial services that he talked about having to play. And he does have a female singer helping him out on this. Can download it. digitally excerpts is what I did for him. It's free. I think he just wants people to hear his music. I believe he's from Alaska. I don't know what the name means, or maybe it was just one of each. French hiker. It doesn't look right either. They probably have two H's. Sorry, but anyway. Yeah. So let's turn to.
Look at the name, be a hitchhiker on crutches.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Hiking, like. Crutches, wounded, that makes sense. I found that piece in this, when I played it for students, they found that piece incredibly moving. And like I said, his goal was to help his fellow soldiers mourn, try to get them to let their emotions out and to express their grief. So, one other thing, follow up on the memorial service thing with is that apparently one soldier said something that became a practice, is after the end of a service, they would take the deceased iPod, if they could find it, and play some of his favorite songs and stand around in honor of him. Even though some of the music didn't seem appropriate for memorial service, it was still part of him, you know? So they would stand and listen. Well, I guess as long as it took, maybe, you know, and as a way of honoring their comrade, which I thought was also a very interesting use of technology. So let's go on briefly. I want to talk about music therapy because obviously people come back so damaged from wars. It's always been the case, and I have a very brief summary, basically, of music therapy with military populations. And this is based on the last chapter of the book, Music and War in the United States, written by two music therapists. I'm not a music therapist, so I needed some expertise. But this gives, we'll go kind of zip through this, and kind of a timeline of how the practice of using music to treat psychological and physical wounds has evolved over the years. And then I've got a little handout I want to share with you about this. So, 1865, after the Civil War, you notice there'd be a lot of coincidence with developments after a war, not coincidentally. So, President Lincoln established the National Asylum for Disabled Volunteer Soldiers and Seamen, and basically established homes where soldiers could go who had suffered physical injuries, amputations, et cetera, especially. Not so much mental, they didn't really know about that much, but that basically just emphasized the recreational use of music. Music as a pastime and a way to you know, maybe lift their spirits. The first program, Guild of St. Cecilia in England, was the first program that incorporated music regularly in the treatment of patients. And Frederick Carford was advised, he corresponded with Florence Nightingale, who agreed that it was an important thing to do, and she had some ideas about organization. And so, coming out of her experience in the Crimean War in the 19th century, earlier 19th century. These early developments, these are all Americans, although I think one of Margaret Anderton might, I think was Canadian actually. But in the early 20th century, then, women, and I put their names here because their names are not known, they disappeared from history, advocated using music to treat wounded soldiers and disabled. Music therapeutics, it was called. Maud Ilson, after World War I, just said that using any kind, certain kinds of music were better for helping people recover. Anything with voice, piano or violin. She opposed the use of trumpet for obvious reasons. It's military associations with brass instruments. And portable organ, and I don't know what that means. She didn't think that was appropriate. I don't know if she meant like a little pump organ, like the kind people used to have in their homes. But for some reason, maybe because that was associated with hymns of mourning. You know, I don't know. And then Margaret Anderton advocated using music to treat physical problems, to rehabilitate. For example, teaching people to sing, they had to learn how to breathe. It would help them with their breathing, and if they could breathe better, they could it could help calm people down as well. Or playing, like if they tried to play the piano, it might get some dexterity back in their hands. If they only had one hand, they could still use that. You see what I mean? It was like a physical kind of therapy. And psychological treatment was kind of vague. Nobody really understood it very much, and the military didn't want to dwell on that. It's okay to talk about rehabilitation physically, but psychologically, mentally, that was something they didn't want to go there. So 1930 started seeing organized music programs, which got people together in a very positive way. But the problem was they didn't actually hire music teachers for a lot of that. You know, they had doctors supervising, but they didn't have there was no systematized or regular kind of music program. So I can't imagine that any of those groups were really particularly good, unless you had individual musicians. People had been musicians before they went in the service. So World War II, the vast number of casualties, the vast number of wounded coming back from that conflict, spurred the U.S. War Department to come up with a regulation that would provide use for the use of music in military hospitals. And so they talked about physical reconditioning, as I was saying, occupational therapy, and of course, you know, physical therapy, occupational therapy are all distinct professions now. At this point, they were all sort of emerging, and so there was a lot of overlap. 1950s, I just put that because people who were, and a lot of the early practitioners were women, were required to have a bachelor's degree. So there was an attempt to raise the standards and standardize the training for these people who are working with the soldiers, with the veterans. But Vietnam, we all know that not much was done to help veterans coming back from that conflict in terms of recovering from trauma, but there were more studies done, and people, it finally came out in the open how much, what a big problem this was. And then 1980s is when the APA defined PTSD as a psychiatric disorder and officially recognized it as something that needed to be treated. And I had a further definition of that, but I think you all know it, have an idea of what PTSD really encompasses. It's a number of, can manifest itself in many different ways, including flashbacks, uncontrolled anger, depression, the whole gamut of psychological problems like that. Things that can trigger memory, a horrible memory, an unpleasant one. So that was progress. And then going forward, in the years when we started, when we sent service people to Afghanistan and then Iraq, and those titles that gave those campaigns are ridiculous. Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom, almost 2 million service people deployed between those two. I think, and then in those years is, of course, when consciousness became much more devoted to trying to heal people who had been experienced emotional trauma. So now music therapy is provided in many settings, and PTSD and TBI, traumatic brain injuries, are acknowledged and diagnosed and then treated.
I was going to say, heard a talk by an Army psychiatrist in the early 2000s, and she was saying that they just started to acknowledge PTSD in Army psychiatry after Operation Enduring Freedom was going on, and their treatment of PTSD, like their approach to all medical issues when you're in war is to get you to not healed but back to battle readiness. So everything, all medical treatment is evaluated based on battle readiness.
Okay.
And so they would provide very short-term PTSD treatment to get them back to battle. They would evaluate in terms of battle readiness and to return to battle.
That's important. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was not.
It's not just to heal them. It's just to get them so they could fight again.
Right. Their goal is not wellness, at least. And I don't know if it's different when there's not an active operation to return to.
Yeah. That historically is true too. I remember reading about in World War I, soldiers were sent to recuperate only to the point where they could be sent back in. And they talk about shell shock in World War I, battle fatigue in World War II, but it's really the same kind of thing. Right? I thought if you just had, 6 weeks of R&R, that you would be ready to go back. Interesting, okay. And of course, nowadays, music therapy is a recognized profession. It's got, like any other profession, it has standards. You have to be board certified in order to be a practicing music therapist. Many of them have graduate degrees in music therapy and with different specializations. And there's so many ways that it's used. It can be used individually. It can be used in a group setting. One of the group setting treatments that I read about, for example, to help with people who have trouble focusing, focused versus divided attention, how to kind of get a balance there, is to have a drum circle where people are playing in just hand drums, given a different rhythm to play, and they have to play their own rhythm while listening to all the others that are going on. And of course that affects coordination and well, but it does also require a focus that might be have been damaged by being in combat. So Creative Forces Network, this is what I want to share with you. This is a program funded by the National Endowment for the Arts, and incidentally is one of the reasons that Congress never has cut the NEA budget, even though every year it comes up, people want to slash it.
Yeah.
This is a big argument in favor of keeping it because it supports the military. So I have a summary here of the three studies that have been done on this program, starting in 2011. And I don't know if there's enough for everybody, but we can take a look at these and, you can't really see that there. Yeah, maybe you can share a little bit with some of these and pass them around. I didn't know how many copies they have shared.
Yes.
Yeah, you're just passing that. But it summarizes the different areas of treatment that music therapy addresses. And there's a longer document, of course, that this comes from. But they promote rehabilitation and recovery across multiple domains. And it's not just music therapy, arts therapy is used. So sometimes theater or visual art is also incorporated. Neurological, physiological, physical, functional, cognitive, social, and so on, all these different categories are covered. Let's take a minute and look through this to see what you can glean from it. Categories, psychological, behavioral, neurological and cognitive functioning, and social and relational difficulties.
Well, what music created, the hype for going into battle,
mm-hmm.
Now music restore it.
It's the total contradiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a paradox. And this incorporation of telehealth, the setting of technology made this possible, that even people who live in remote areas can connect with a music therapist via computer and have online work. I mean, they have to be assessed, as I understand, they have to be assessed at a VA facility first, but then when they set up the actual process of treatment, they can do it long distance, which makes the therapy available to a larger population. So one of the last category here is it's at the top of the third page. Songwriting and music therapy can help returning service members to reduce feelings of loneliness and isolation by offering a window into service members' lived experiences of military service, injury, recovery, homecoming, and transition from active duty, and then particularly in these areas, personal struggles and barriers to recovery, moving forward, relational challenges, and positive relationships and support. And I want to focus on that because there are a number of programs that I found, actually some of my students found them for me, that are about songwriting for vets. So, let me see if I can get back to it. Here we go. One of them is a program called Warrior Songs. This is, whoa, it's way too big for the screen. This is a program from, I want to say Madison-based song program that pairs songwriters with veterans to come up with lyrics and write songs. And they have a program for women only, which is interesting. I think they also have a program for men. But we tend to forget that there were a lot of women serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. So they have an album here that you can download with an explanation. So it's really a collaborative effort and it seems to be very, very popular, very successful. I can't, again, I'm not supposed to stream anything, but I would say that this first one I've listened to, Sacrifice Ignored, is really interesting because it's a woman singing about how she's returned to civilian life, and she's coming out of the grocery store, and she's got a sticker or something on her car that indicates that she had been in the military, and a man comes up and says, "Thank you for your husband's service."
Oh!
And she feels so torn because, of course, she appreciates the idea, but to sacrifice and ignore, I made the sacrifice. I was the one who served. And I don't get recognition for that. Source of frustration and anger. And then I think, so that was a good song. I mean, that was very powerful, I thought. I haven't listened to all of them, but I'm thinking I should just get the album and download it. Keep it to myself, you know, the things that soldiers were taught to do, and try to just get on with your life, right? And also the idea of bonding with sisters turning is another song. Another group, this is in Milwaukee, but also now in Madison, is called Guitars for Vets. Now, these are not music therapists. They're not certified therapists. But they say that directly. But they've started a program. This is, again, to tie in with the idea of expressing something in song that you might not be comfortable saying. So this was started in Milwaukee, and I think it's been successful enough that it's gone to other places, too. And it looks to me like this particular man has some physical injuries as well.
Yeah.
Right. His hands are not look very supple. But Guitars for Vets provides, they ask you to donate $200 if you're interested, provides a guitar and a number of lessons for a vet. And they do take nonprofit to bring music instruction to veterans with psychological disorders. And it gives, the whole point of this is, when you have to learn something technically, like how to play even a couple of chords on a guitar, you have to focus intensively. And I think that's part of the strategy. But then being able to actually, how many of you learned to play an instrument at some point in your lives? You know that feeling of success, like when you can finally play a tune, you know, or something simple, but it's like, you know, an achievement. And so it doesn't take much to get to that point. So there's some. This is an article from the Madison paper, the Isthmus, that music's gotten, this young man's gotten involved and motivated and helped him to communicate with other people. And here's another PTSD victim with so these are all the symptoms that the music can help them with. This is an alarming statistic. 1 in 6 soldiers returning from Iraq, estimated, suffers from this disorder. 20% of veterans from the Iraq War return home with a significant diagnosable psychological problem. So that's an estimate because we don't even know.
I think that's pretty low. You
think it's
very
more?
Low. Yeah.
It's very, very low. It's low. Underestimated, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So my question is, do any of you know people who have experienced this, have experienced PTSD? You have relatives or friends of neighbors or relatives of neighbors who have to struggle with this?
We're psychotherapists, so we see people that are...
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes.
And just a note, yeah, just a note, before he's on one of those that said that the telehealth and get out into the areas, they've just cut the funding on Veterans Choice Program, which... it was hard to navigate to start with, but it's totally cut as of June 1, and that was where you didn't have to go to the VA center, you could go to a contracted therapist. I was one, and so all of my veteran
clients
have to go back to the VA center now.
That number might be correct because unless you were diagnosed before you got out, you don't get that as a diagnosis for your
disability
from the military. If it was diagnosed like 5 years later, it doesn't count. No, you have to be diagnosed before you leave the military. It has to be in your jacket, so to speak, before you leave.
Wow.
So yeah. that might be the number that's actually counting as a disability when they leave the military. It's much higher than that.
Probably, I would say there's some sort of trauma from almost any returning veteran.
Mm-hmm.
It could be severe and it could be not so severe, but
yeah, I'm sure.
I can't imagine going through the war and then coming back and not having trauma.
Yeah.
It's pretty...
Well... So programs like this that are nonprofit and rely on other support, it's good to have them since the government programs seem to be on shaky ground, funded for funding, unfortunately. This I thought was interesting though. Working guitars are tuned up so you can donate guitars. If you have something lying around, you can donate it through Madison. And the working guitars tuned up, given to participating vets. Broken guitars are transformed into art. And auctioned off. So no matter what kind of instrument, if it's just too bad to even use, to beat up, you can do something else with it. I thought that was pretty ingenious that they were handling it that way. So that's all I have, and we have a few minutes left if anybody wants to raise any questions or comments. Have you worked with vets in your practice?
Yes. Oh, yeah. You have to have quite a bit of extra training. But a contract, there's military one source, which is supposed to be for like an employee assistance program type thing. That's for reintegration into normal life with your family members.
Mm-hmm.
And then but that Veterans Choice program was really pretty good once you got through the system, and now it's gone. So
was music any part of the treatment that you were using with people?
Well, I have a degree in music, but I really didn't use it at all. I mean, I don't have a certification in music therapy.
Right.
Well, plus I would say my husband probably has PTSD from Vietnam, but people who were career military, who were staying in for the full 20-some years, didn't report it because then they would be worried they weren't fit for duty. And that they might be jeopardize their military careers.
And then they wouldn't get the pension.
And it, no. He has a disability. At the end of your military service, they add up how much you are disabled. And mm-hmm. he has disability from baseball injury. It's stuff that happened to him while he was playing baseball for the military. they counted that, but not any psychological. Yeah, because it was way after Vietnam, so you can't just add in something clear 20 years later after you had it 20 years ago.
Wow. And you can't be weak.
No,
you can't be weak in the military.
It's underreported by.
So you can't say, "Oh man, I'm having nightmares. I can't sleep. Haven't slept for weeks." You know, mm-hmm. you can't say that. It's
the modern catch-22.
Yeah, yeah, it sure is. Well, there was a recent SEAL Team episode on TV, the TV show SEAL Team, mm-hmm. where the guy does really have PTSD, but he couldn't report it. And then his friends took him to the VA, and they said, "Well, you can't have treatment for PTSD." No, it was a traumatic brain injury that got had, plus PTSD. But because he didn't report it when he left the military, they can't treat him for it. And so then he went to the parking lot and shot himself. So it was kind of a sad episode because he went and begged them to give him treatment. And they said, "No, we can't because you didn't have that in your..." It wasn't reported.
It wasn't in your file.
It wasn't in your file. And the doctor said, "I can't provide you treatment for what's not in your file."
In the VA center, of course, you can go get treatment other places if you have other kinds of insurance, and if you can pay for it. In the state of Washington, our veterans have, even if they don't have industrial medical insurance, or you know, they might be able to get Medicaid and then they mm-hmm. can get treated. But it's pretty tough. But there's a lot of Vietnam trauma PTSD out there that nobody ever even says. I mean, they're crawling the walls at night. Their wives are saying they're crawling the walls at night. And nobody says, "Oh, well, you know."
Yeah, I know there's a lot of homelessness among Vietnam vets.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they can't maintain employment because they're too maybe anger or impulsivity or... Mm-hmm. You know, if a car goes down the alleyway and backfires, they're mode again, and then you know, and then I had one person that very highly educated had sat at the table with Petraeus, and was that how you say it?
Yeah.
I can't remember the first name of that first letter. Andreas, and he was a mess on the outside. Yeah. And he finally figured out the only way that he was going to have any kind of mental stability was to go back in.
Wow.
Yeah, because he knew how to handle himself and how to manage it in.
That's it.
And couldn't manage it out. And that was a hard thing. Because, you know, family life was all upset. He couldn't get other jobs. And even though he was highly qualified for
stuff. On the music thing, my husband's truck has metal blaring in it constantly. If I go out and drive in his truck, I have to be sure to turn the volume down because I'm going to shock my whole self and jump like that. When I turn the engine on and hear the metal blare out of his truck constantly.
Have you talked to him about that? Asked him why?
He just says he likes it. Mm-hmm. That is
well,
his thing.
The quote was
blaring.
War is metal.
Yeah.
Well, but Jim.
Interesting too, that in your two previous talks with those wars, there were the two sides. There were the wars within. I mean, the music within the military, and then the music within the
civilian
public arena. Yeah. But we don't particularly get that with these wars. There's nothing from no public songs other than things from the past related to war that are sung by John Q. Public in support of the war or against the war or the.
They try to use a national anthem for that, sort of, but not really.
Well,
I know. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Two things that I'm thinking about. One is kind of going off of like the very first thing that I said, but just kind of looking, like, I think that this is, like having resources in action for veterans is hugely important, because it is working against this, like, war machine, you know, like, that's the real issue here. Mm-hmm. It's not people on either side of the war, like, they're both suffering from, like, the military-industrial complex, and our country profits hugely, and people, individuals profit hugely off of war. You know, that's like, everyone is experiencing a lot of suffering because of those things. But at the same time, and no one's, like, trauma or pain is, like, greater than someone else's. But, I mean, we also, in this conversation, I think, need to go out of our way to acknowledge the extent of trauma and, like, life destruction that, like, people in Iraq and around Iraq are also experiencing, because, like, it is, like, there's lots of really horrible things and trauma that the vets are experiencing going to war, but it's also, like, at least they get to come home to a place that isn't in war, and they're still, like, hugely, like, experiencing a lot of layers of violence and trauma in the U.S. still.
Mm-hmm.
But that is just a physical, tangible difference between people who are experiencing trauma in Iraq, and they're still there, and, like, still experiencing that daily, like, barrage of violence, you know. And there mm-hmm. is, like, and, like, they don't get, like, a lot of the opportunities to, like that aren't wide enough for veterans coming home to the U.S. either, you know. But there is still that huge global disparity.
Yeah.
And I guess my action response to that is, like, every single person who, like, cares about this world needs to do everything they can to prevent more U.S. war. Like, we need, like, huge resistance to future war. You know, if we go to war with Iran, like, the Middle East, like, millions of more people are going to die. More people, like, it's, and, like, it's going to expand all across the Middle East, you know. Like, we need to be, like, on the streets doing whatever it takes, mm-hmm. like, barraging our, like, senators and, like, congressmen and everyone that we can to, like, prevent another war, because that is going to hurt everyone so much more.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're out of time, so thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your opinions and your thoughts.